Okay, this is our final hour with the judge, Judge Jim Gray. You've heard some of the topics, and we'll take your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Back with Judge Jim Gray, and do you miss the bench at all, Judge?
You know, I really do. I miss the people. We did a good job. And George, my view is that the system is working. I'm proud of being a judge. Most of the things work. Yes, there are problems. Yes, they could be better. But honestly, too, probably the most gratifying thing I did on the bench was help people resolve their cases voluntarily, and I can still do that in my private mediation business.
The answer is yes. What was the strangest case you ever had?
Oh, I actually had a case involving multiple personality disorders. So this woman, actually, supposedly she had five different personalities, and she sued her therapist because the therapist told her really low-level life boyfriend how he could call up one that was a coquette, one that was sexually involved.
And, yeah.
And so he was able to call that one up and have his way with her. And it was pretty interesting. I remember that the defense had a motion to exclude the plaintiff's testimony. Why? Well, because when she testifies on direct, how do we know if that's the same person that's testifying in cross-examination? Kind of a novel idea, which I denied and said, well, we'll all kind of keep tuned and find out. But that's a direct answer to the question. That was a rather unusual case.
And she filed one suit or the five?
She signed it five times.
That's something. Did you ever have a tense situation in court where you needed the bailiff to jump in or sheriffs or anything like that?
No, I never did. They always knew that the bailiff was there. The only time I ever felt in 25 years concern for my own safety, I was on the mental health calendar, and there was this young man who was a tennis professional, actually, from Palm Springs, but he came to Orange County and stopped taking his meds, and so he became psychotic, and so he was in court, and he was starting to testify. I was kind of trying to move away from him. By the way, you know, I did order that he take his meds, and he came back in about 5 or 6 days, and he was totally better. Just, he was fine. We were joking about playing tennis and how I'd never win Wimbledon and all the rest of that stuff. Night and day transformation between first and last, but that was the only time.
Were you lenient with sentencing, or were you tough?
It just depends. George, judges speak for society. I'm in the accountability business. I believe in accountability at all levels of society, like we spoke before, and I believe that short amounts of time in custody for people, if you're talking nonviolent offenses, is really helpful. They see that you mean it. As far as long periods of confinement, that's basically to remove someone from society. It's vastly overdone in our prison system. Pat Nolan, who was a member of the assembly in, I think it was Burbank here in Southern California, would vote on all these stringent measures, and the longer prison sentences, the better, until he was finally convicted of an elections fraud and sentenced to prison for 2 years. Came out totally different, said, you know, I've changed my mind. Many too many people are in prison that should not be. And then he said something that's really quotable. We should reserve our prison space for people we're afraid of, not people we're mad at. And I think he's right.
That's a good point. Let's take some calls here. This hour is going to go by very quickly. Rose is with us in Ocala, Florida. First-time caller. Hey, good morning, Rose. Go ahead.
Good morning. What a breath of fresh air hearing you guys today. It's really wonderful.
Yeah, he is good.
I'm going to bring up something that nobody ever talks about. The reason why they're not letting go of the tax code is because Congress and the IRS, they both know that a lot of the people that pay taxes are under actually what they call voluntary compliance. Where they make their money from is not even legislated. So therefore, the money that comes in from that, it's voluntary compliance, it's like playground money.
Freebies.
It's freebie money. They don't have to account for it. In fact, the governmental accounting agency or the governmental audit system that they have, they even admit that they don't know how much money actually comes in under 1040s.
You know, and what else is going on? Thanks for the call, Rose. The billions of dollars that the IRS has been giving out to fraudulent return folks. Unbelievable, Judge.
Oh, the bureaucracy, the fraud is staggering. And we just, barely come to grips with what the changes, the beneficial changes that would occur if we were to change away from this tax code.
I mean, so, would you mail a return with money to somebody in, you know, Uzbekistan or something?
It's amazing. In fact, you know, it's been shown that there are a couple of hundred tax returns that have been sent to the same address. I mean, you'd think in today's world with our computers, we'd kind of flag those.
Yeah.
It's a huge bureaucracy. So actually, Rose, you convinced me. I fully agree with you.
That is something that hopefully somebody will change. Now, is anybody really doing anything to repeal the tax code?
No, not at the moment.
Nobody.
That I'm aware of. No, no. The vested interests are there. And you know, it's a major thing, George. It would have an enormous impact on our society. We should have that Blue Ribbon Commission to look into all of these things and to do it publicly so that people wouldn't be scared and they would realize the benefits. And again, go back to Governor Johnson's example, but if you're going to buy a can of Coca-Cola in a vending machine where it now costs you a dollar, okay, and of that, about maybe 20 cents is taxes.
If that.
So a lot of that is taxes that are payroll taxes and other taxes that go into that can of Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to change the income tax, the price of the Coke would come down to 80 cents or 78 cents, and then you're going to have a 23-cent tax on it. So basically, it's going to come back. You're still going to pay a dollar for that can of Coca-Cola. It's not going to have that big a change because now, again, like we said earlier, the products are going to be reduced in cost because they don't have to pay taxes on them. So it's not going to be that huge a decision or a huge change from a detrimental standpoint. The positives will be staggering.
People will spend that disposable extra money that they save from the taxes.
Well, they will, or they can save it. You know,
today,
George, we penalize people saving money, which is kind of stupid. We penalize people investing money because the government takes a part of it. That would no longer be there, and it would encourage people to invest. It would encourage people to save. It's just the more you get into it, the more you will agree that we've got to repeal the 16th Amendment, repeal the tax code, put in that fair tax or a consumption tax, and we will really reap the benefits from it.
You know, I'm a believer in concealed carry, and I was a proponent of that when Missouri finally passed it years ago. Most rank-and-file police officers, Judge, are in favor of concealed weapons. It was the police chiefs who were opposed to it, the politicians.
Well, I'm not a gun enthusiast, which maybe makes my opinion even more strong, because it's just like drug prohibition. Prohibition never works as well as regulation and control. It just doesn't work. It's a matter of responsibility, and it's a matter of freedom. And there's a lot to be said for, you know, in Aurora, Colorado, just a heinous thing where these guys come into the theater and start shooting. You know, if people have guns, you know, maybe you'll get off one or two shots instead of 40 or 50. I believe in concealed carry as well. I'm a libertarian, of course, so that's pretty much a natural.
Well, and crime has gone down in cities that have that. There's no question about that.
It does. I mean, there's some problems, too. But all in all, it would really be a net benefit.
Let's go next to Gary in Houston, Texas, on the Wild Card Line. Hey, Gary, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Mr. Gray, I don't know if you're familiar with a recent case where a Marine made a wrong turn. He's currently in jail. I think it's in El Paso or in Mexico. And it's a lot in the news here, but we can't seem to get anybody to get any attention to get him out of jail. He was going to his base somewhere on the East Coast from the West Coast. So I just wanted to touch base with you. Your ex-New Mexico governor maybe can call somebody.
This is the one who's in.
You know about this case?
He's in Mexico, right?
Yeah, he made a wrong turn. I've been through there. There was graffiti on the sign, and once you get there, you can't get out. It was about 3 days ago, maybe. It's real recent, but he's stuck in the jail.
Wow, that's typical Mexican prisons. I mean, they're that way. They probably tried to shake him down to make some money. That happens all the time down there, Judge.
Well, I'm sorry to say that he's right. And Gary, I think I've read about this. You know, we should be able, with Mexico, to have our people, if they're ever confined, be able to call a consulate immediately. We try to do that here in the United States for Mexican nationals. And our government really has to stand up and make sure that these things happen all the more. I don't think our government is nearly as responsive to our people when they get into trouble as they should be. This is probably yet another example.
Yep. If he had a couple $100 on him, I think he would have been let go.
Here we are in the Tijuana jail. I remember that song by the Kingston Trio.
That's what they do.
People, you know, George, as you know, that happens more in more places in the world than it doesn't.
Yep.
That's just the way the world operates. And fortunately, we don't have it as much here, but it certainly goes on in other places.
Let's go to Alaska. Dale is with us west of the Rockies in Wasilla, or Wasilla, as we would pronounce it. It's pronounced a couple ways. Dale, how do you pronounce it out there? Wasilla?
Yeah, Wasilla.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it's all I saw backwards.
All right.
I was curious why no mention is being made of why our country is run the way it is today. I mean, the Rockefellers and the Federal Reserve bankers own our country. There's no way that anybody's going to be able to be president without their blessing. And the reason why we have drugs and every nook and cranny of our country is because they are making such a tremendous profit on it. And it's the same way with the prison system. So how do we handle the real issues here?
Well, he's right. The Federal Reserve is strong, Judge.
Well, it is. And one of our planks is to vastly reduce it in size quickly and eventually have it evolve out of existence. You know, we need a second revolution in our country. I mean, Thomas Jefferson talked about this a long time ago. We haven't had one since. It doesn't have to be violent, but I do believe, and again, I'm back on my soapbox, but Governor Gary Johnson will help us do these things for the right things, for the right reasons. He told me in 2012 when he asked me to be his running mate, said, Jim, throughout the election campaign, if you disagree with me, feel free to discuss it publicly. I mean, that's the type of person he is. He has no ego. He wants to get the right information. So that is the revolution that we need. Get us in the presidential debates. Vote Governor Gary Johnson for president, put in a coalition government, and then we will be responsive and we will do the right things for the right reason and get away from all this. In the meantime, of course, as everyone knows, money is much too important in elections, and you got to win within the system before you can change it. But people, again, are fed up. We'll take out some ads and say, okay, we're not going to spend as much as the Republican and the Democratic candidates, but understand every dollar that they get pretty much has a hook in it, and there's going to be people that want to get their return on investment. We don't have that money. Vote for us instead, and we will act for you.
And he was a two-term governor, wasn't he?
Yes, sir. He was reelected by more than he was originally elected. And that was straight out of the box. You know, he sold his company, and they'd never run for office before, ran for governor. But people saw who he was. They voted for him. And then for a second term, he was reelected by a greater margin.
Interesting. Okay, let's go to Jerry in Minnesota, east of the Rockies. Jerry, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, George, it's great to speak to you. Judge, I had a quick question. What about the gangs? It's ridiculous. Every time you open the paper, it's always gang violence, gang shootings. You know, it's just ridiculous. And I'm calling from northern Minnesota. And a quick question, if you guys either you know what Hibbing is famous for.
Well, I've been in your boundary waters up in between Minnesota and Canada, and what a wonderful place that is. But, you know, there are gangs everywhere. And gangs aren't necessarily a bad thing. They're groupings of people together for social reasons. But we have a lot of juvenile street gangs. Again, I already spoke about the primary source of funding is the sale of illegal drugs. They use it as a recruiting tool. But out there, Jerry, you know, it's a truism. Someone is going to mentor our children. Someone will. And if it's not the parents or it's not the basketball coach or the scout leader, it'll be Charles Manson. It'll be a drug dealer. And that's where we're falling down. We are not spending the time and energy and even money necessary to mentor our children. So they're taking them in gangs as a fallback position. And that's an indictment on all of us. Once you show folks that there's a better way, they'll get away from these gangs and go into that better way. We talked about education, better education. In the juvenile justice system, I was saying, look, we've got to screen The first time a juvenile comes into the system, we should screen them for things like dyslexia and substance abuse and eyeglasses and all the rest of that sort of stuff. Because if they're dyslexic, and about 15% are, they'll start sitting at the back of the classroom, they'll start stop paying attention, they'll get into trouble, they'll, you know, be suspended, all that sort of stuff. If you just show them they're dyslexic and show them that they're not, you know, there's nothing the matter with them other than this, we need to spend the money at the front of the train in the engine instead of the rear of the train, the caboose, which is, in fact, jails and prison and punitive. That's where we're falling down, and shame on us.
How extensive was your campaign tour when you were the VP Libertarian candidate?
Would you I traveled all over the country. I was traveling a whole bunch. I was, you know, working as well, but I was probably traveling around the country about half the time. I'd be met at airports by good libertarians, good people, caring. They'd take me around, usually in their own car at their own expense. Lots of good people, just not enough of them.
What, you didn't have any Secret Service protection?
I didn't have any. No, we didn't. Neither did the governor. You know, that's going to change in the next election if we can convince him to run. But it was gratifying and also very discouraging. You know, you'd travel from one university to another, and you'd pass five in between the first one and the second. It's a big country out there, George.
Sure
and
is.
The only way you can get it is the media. You know, you have an enormous force in our country, and thank you for that. But it's pretty overwhelming to run in the United States of America. But we do it because I think that we have something to offer.
Well, you know, we run the show with just common sense, Judge. You know, we just, of course, it's entertaining and it's fun, but there's that aspect like tonight where we want the truth, we want to get it out there, and we just use common sense, and it just, it works.
Well, it ain't so common. That's part of the problem. But people innately, if they see a leader, you know, I think Ronald Reagan did some good things and maybe some not so good things, but he was a leader. He would simply say, this is where we're going, this is where the direction we're heading, and we don't have that today. You know, we have people trying to lead from behind, and we just don't have the leaders that we need, and we're paying the price.
Barbara in Los Angeles. Go for it, Barbara. Hi.
Hi, before I get to my question, I just want to say I heard Lisa Gar last weekend, and I thought she really hit her stride.
Yeah, she's super, huh?
But anyway, I wanted to know what your guests would do about regulating prescription drug abuse, because there's two problems I see with prescription drug abuse. One is it's a different class of drugs. Some of them are than the...
Okay, let's get your comments before the break here, Judge.
Okay.
Prescription drug abuse.
There's two problems. One is that there are some doctors that are, in effect, illegal, and they are prescribing or over-prescribing drugs. Number two, we have a system in which you can go to one doctor and get some drugs, then you can go to another doctor and get the same drugs, and neither doctor knows what you've done. So you can do that if you're determined to. But the second problem is almost as bad. Today, Barbara, there are tens of thousands of people in our country who are in unnecessary pain, and they will go to their doctors, and they're in pain, but their doctors will hesitate to prescribe enough painkillers for them because they're looking over their shoulder at the DEA, and they're afraid of getting sanctioned by the DEA.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as much of a crime, too, at keeping people in pain unnecessarily. So those are both problems we need
and
to
Judge,
address.
And, Judge, medicinal marijuana takes care of a lot of pain. You know that. We'll be back with Final Calls. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about the unusual, the strange, the bizarre, followed by a couple hours of open lines. And when we come back in just a moment with Judge Jim Gray, we'll wrap up with your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. We'll take your final calls. Jim, if a president gets elected, wants to make some of these changes you've just discussed, he still has a tough time with Congress, doesn't he?
Well, that's true, but Congress and politicians are really good, George, at followership, as you know. They'll follow where the votes are. We need a second revolution, and I'm convinced that if Governor Gary Johnson is convinced to run for president and wins, that we'll have such attention that we'll be able to sway Congress to do the right thing. So I'm really enthusiastic about this, and besides, you know, what are we going to do, quit?
You got to get on these presidential...
critical.
You have to.
We have, it's make or break.
These debates would be critical.
We'll be viable if we're in the three presidential, one vice presidential debates, and honestly, we'll not be seen as viable if we're not. We're pursuing this really hard.
Say hi to me if you get into one of those debates.
I promise you.
All right, thanks. Let's go to Ted, truck driving in California. Hey, Ted, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Hey, good, Ted.
Judge, you're just my kind of guy. I wish you were still running for something. I'd vote for you in a heartbeat. You're my kind of guy.
You just might.
Well, thank you, Ted. Wish you'd talk to my kids.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's one of the things I had to say was, I'm 62, and when I was a kid in fourth grade, we were taught patriotism and all that kind of stuff in our early government. Today, the kids aren't taught that kind of stuff at all. And my question is this. I found out something a couple of years ago that just blew my socks off, and it has to do with an alternative government. I'm sure that you've already heard about it. De jure and de facto?
I'm sorry. You've lost me. No, I don't know what that is.
Okay, well, in a real quick nutshell here, back in Lincoln's day, our government changed. Now, I won't go into the history of it, but it's when we went from a republic to a corporate-type government, that de facto de jure.
Okay, yeah.
Well, yes, practicality comes into this. It was Benjamin Franklin that said at the end of our Constitutional Convention when asked, what type of government we have, he said, well, a republic, ma'am, if we can keep it. And we've lost it from my standpoint in so many ways. But it's our government, Ted, and we get the government we deserve. And if it isn't working, it's our fault, and we've got to go and fix it. And so that's what we're trying to do. We need your help. So many people around the country say exactly what you did. But then when it comes time to voting, they vote for the lesser of two evils. And as we say kind of tritely, if you vote for lesser of two evils, you still get evil. Wouldn't it be better to vote in favor of someone? Everyone that voted for Governor Gary Johnson, I believe, is proud of that vote, and they will continue to be. We just have to take it upon ourselves to make these changes.
Is there another country out there, Judge, that has a model that you think they might be doing it the right way?
Oh. That's interesting. As far as the war on drugs is concerned, Uruguay is now doing it the right way. The government is rallying, and they are actually taking the bottom out from the illegal dealers, and they are selling the drugs themselves.
I was going to say, they're in production, aren't they?
They actually are. I don't know if other countries are doing it. New Zealand's doing a pretty good job. They've had an economic revolution. They have a democracy. I think they're doing pretty well. I would point at New Zealand.
Do you ever see the day where the cartels, the drug manufacturers, will end up doing this for the legal purposes and just selling it like a normal business, like a beer distributor, a beer manufacturer would make beer?
That certainly would be possible. You have a lot of people that made a lot of illegal money that, in effect, turn it into legitimate enterprises to launder it or otherwise. It almost can't be stopped. Today, if you go to South America, the drug lords have more money and more guns than the government does. There's staggering amounts of money involved in this, and it gets laundered. It's not a coincidence, by the way, that every major bank has a branch office in Miami. Money corrupts. I asked people, how much corruption can you buy from a 15-year-old for $50 in cash? And the answer is quite a bit. Ask a different question, how much corruption can you buy at any level of society for $1 million in cash? And the answer is equally quite a bit. Money corrupts people, and we've got to address the money problem, and then the other things will fall into place.
I addressed Breaking Bad earlier in the show. Did you ever have a chance to watch that TV series?
I did, and at least I saw one of them. And, it's a real-life example.
It is. They washed the money, and they bought a car wash with it.
That's right. When I was in the U.S. Attorney's Office, we had a case coming through where this junior executive from the Department of Water and Power had just retired, gone down to Columbia, and was bringing drugs back up through Los Angeles International Airport,
yes.
Lost his nerve and tried to, right before customs, he tried to hide behind a 5-inch pipe. He just called attention to himself.
He went
taken
nuts.
To a secondary location, found that he's concealed several ounces of cocaine in the crotch of his pants. I thought to myself, if we're doing that to mid-level executives of the Department of Water and Power, imagine other people that we're corrupting.
Yeah.
It just happens. It's just the money is staggering, and that's the biggest problem.
Would he have been caught if he had just played it cool?
Oh, sure. Sure,
they still would have got.
You know,
George, I'm a member of something called LEAP, which is Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I commend, we have numbers of speakers. No one can accuse us of being soft on crime. You know, the former chief of police of Seattle and the former assistant chief of police of Los Angeles
right.
Police Department, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's out there. We are talking sense. And not only on your show, if you want to, I can get you more speakers from their various perspectives, but we just need to talk the truth. Just need to get out there and say what is honestly true. And in my discussions, I never try to exaggerate, always make sure that I use government statistics before I quote any. It can happen. It is happening. Young people, you want to get some encouragement. Young people are beginning to see what's happening. They are flocking toward the liberty movement, the responsibility movement, because, of course, it's their future. So I take a great deal of solace in young people today.
We have Dale in Raleigh, North Carolina, on the wild card line. Hey, Dale, go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure thing,
I've never seen a guest or heard a guest that I agreed with everything that he said.
Here he is.
I have two questions. One of them is personal. The other one's on the other side of the spectrum. There's a lot of us out here, and unfortunately I'm one, that has a daughter that is hooked on heroin. There's many people, these Al-Anon meetings, nobody knows how, as a parent, how to handle it. Is it the last drug? Wait till they hit bottom? Have the people say, no, you gotta be there when you need them? It's caused divorce in my family, many, many others. And you as a judge have seen it all. Maybe you could recommend your way of what you would think that would be the best way to handle a problem child.
Well,
and the second question I had was, if you get a chance, do you think term limits will ever come to being? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Dale, I'm certainly sympathetic, and honestly, I'm in the same position you are. My daughter is bipolar, and she self-medicates with methamphetamines. She's been to jail several times, that sort of thing. You know, it's individual. But when it comes down to it, again, it makes as much sense to put my daughter, your daughter, or Robert Downey Jr. in jail for what they put into their bodies like it would Betty Ford in jail for her alcohol problem. It's a medical issue. And in fact, if you're going to choose treatment on the one hand or punishment on the other, if you have a loved one, you would prefer that they get the treatment that they need. Richard Nixon is the villain on this one, by the way, because according to his own Attorney General Kleindienst, he knew full well that treatment worked and prohibition did not. But for political reasons, he declared the war on drugs for the political benefits, and they were staggering. They got lots and lots of political benefits, but we have punished people unnecessarily throughout. Hold people accountable for what they do. Hopefully they will, your loved ones will start seeing where they're going. But my daughter, being bipolar, said to me, you know, directly, Dad, the only time I really feel normal is when I'm using. So she needs to get closer to medical professionals that can help her. She is now. I hope your daughter is as well. I don't have a magic wand, but certainly putting your daughter and mine in jail is not going to help really anything. Term limits, I think, are overrated. If I were king, again, king of California, King James has kind of a background to it, but it hasn't caught on yet. But I would have term limits to the degree that, for example, for members of Congress, 5 consecutive terms, that would be 10 years, then sit out one, you know, and then if the voters want to vote you back again 2 years thereafter, go for it. 2 terms in the U.S. Senate, that's 12 years, that's enough. Sit out a term and run for something different or run again the next time. We're losing a lot of people that know what's going on, which gives the staff an awful lot of power that they probably should not have. So that would be my compromise. By the way, I would also have term limits for the justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. How long? I don't know. 15 years is probably enough, and then you do away with the feebleness and somebody appointing someone like Clarence Thomas, for example, without talking to him directly. No one that's 40 years of age has enough experience and insights to be on the Supreme Court of the United States. Why did George H.W. Bush appoint a 40-year-old? Well, that's pretty easy. He wanted to have somebody that would carry on his legacy for 35 years or something. With my position, that would never happen because 15 years and he'd be out.
And you know what? 15 years, even 10 years is enough.
Yeah, something, you know, 10, 12, 15 years, whatever people agreed upon. But that's what I would do.
Let's go east. Kelly is in Marietta, Georgia, east of the Rockies. Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Hi. You were speaking about people coming into the country and what you think would be eligible way to do it. You explain it. I didn't hear you say anything about language, because I'm dealing with a whole neighborhood I was raised in, and my parents are still there. The whole neighborhood is basically Mexican now, and my mother's Spanish, so I don't have any prejudices with this. My mother came from Cuba back in the 50s. She learned the American language. She speaks it better than I do, spells the words better than I do. And I think that's a big, important issue, is when people don't know the American language, I can't communicate with the neighbors. I can't, they don't speak English.
Well, that's a big issue. I mean, we've always said, Judge, if you're going to come to America, speak English, learn it.
You know, I care about people, Kelly, and the reason is that I want them to thrive. And unless they speak English, they'll always be in the second tier. So I want them to learn English in order to be able to thrive and prosper in our country. So I would teach classes in English, but, you know, help along the way. You know, you allow them, you know, you help them and you nudge them along. By the way, I would also, if I were king of California or the king of a school district, teach all of our physical education classes in Spanish, just in conversational Spanish, so all of our kids could become bilingual pretty quickly. But people, I'm not picking on folks that don't speak English, but I would not have ballots in other languages. I think if you're to be a citizen, you should be able to be conversant in English. I wouldn't put other government information except safety information in other languages either. And the reason is, not because I'm picking on anyone, but because I want them to prosper, and unless they learn English, they'll always be kind of second place. May I also add, you say you're from Cuba. I would, and Governor Gary Johnson would, normalize relations with Cuba immediately. That at this point, we're a bunch of bullies. We should normalize those relationships and bring them back into the fold. They're no threat to the United States of America whatsoever, and we should normalize those relations. I hope you agree with that.
Isn't it amazing that Castro is still there? All the others have come and gone.
He's the longest reigning dictator in the world. And, you know, all of our restrictions and boycotts didn't hurt him at all. It hurt the people of Cuba. It certainly did not hurt Fidel or Raul Castro. It's just not the right way to go.
Not that I smoke, but you can't even get a Cuban cigar in the country. Legally, I should say.
You know, and George, you're probably aware, and I was in Cuba, that they use the American dollars as their normal currency. Unless you work for the government and you get pesos, everything else is the American dollars. It's kind of an ironic thing.
Keith in Asheville, North Carolina, wild card line. Keith, go ahead.
Well, it's a real pleasure to talk to both of you. And I was one of the few people that did vote for Gary Johnson.
Oh, did you? All right.
Yes, well, you voted for me too then, Keith. Thank you.
Yes, and what I have to tell you tonight is the war on drugs is a joke. It's been a joke. And violence is coming over from Mexico. It's coming into the southern United States. And it's going to get worse and worse. And if we do the same thing, we're going to get the same results.
Well, Keith, you're right about that. First of all, may I say that I love where you live. Asheville is a wonderful place. And the war on drugs is not a joke. It is a crime. Not only luring our children into this lifestyle and drugs are fully available, just ask Mexico. You know, they've had, under President Calderon's jurisdiction, they lost about 60,000 people in Mexico to violent deaths having nothing to do with drugs whatsoever. It was all drug money that killed those folks. So yes, the drugs can be harmful and can be addicting, but that's only about 10% of the problem, like Gary Johnson said. 90% are drug money problems, drug prohibition problems that we have inflicted upon ourselves. And it's just crazy. I guarantee people, once we move away from drug prohibition, we will all look back, join hands, and be aghast that we could have perpetuated this failed system for so long. That will be obvious.
You know, we should pull some of our troops from all these other countries we're in and let them go up and down the borders.
Well, I don't I don't like the idea of our military being involved in domestic activities. I know you're saying on the borders. If you go to our program of work visas pretty liberally, it's going to start controlling the borders on its own because the incentives will be changed. People do not come here to go to get welfare. They come here, George, like our ancestors. They come here for a better life for themselves, for their families. They come here to work. And unfortunately, the way our system, so-called, is now set up, we're almost keeping people in our country involuntarily. They'd love to go back to Guatemala for Christmas or whatever, but it's so expensive and so dangerous to come here that they actually stay here longer than they would want to. I mean, again, the whole thing is crazy. We've got to regulate it and control it, just like Governor Johnson would do.
Let's take, we're not going to have time for any more calls, believe it or not, Judge, but I do want you to get some information out about your website. And for people who want more information about you, where do they go?
And thank you for that, George. In fact, during some of your breaks, I've been looking at my cell phone, and I've seen numbers of emails that people have sent to me through your website to my website, and I will respond to them. My website is judgejimgray.com. Gray is G-R-A-Y, so judgejimgray.com. I will be able to look at them, and I respond to the emails, and thank you for that. I've also... If anybody is out there and aware, I've written a musical called Americans All.
Really?
It really has a lot of fun. It talks about staying in school and kids. It's meant for high school kids to make good choices. You can go to judgejimgray.com, click on Americans All, and hear at least part of the songs. It's fun.
Who did the songs? Did you?
Oh, I did the songs. I wrote the music. I had it transcribed by a graduate of Juilliard. I'm not dumb. But, she could do all of that. But Vanguard University performed it recently. I'm proud of it. And if you have a community theater or high school that would like to perform really something good, go to Americans All. You'll be glad you did. George, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for what you're doing. Look forward to being back with you again. And like I said, you're beyond belief.
All right. You take care, Judge. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.